This podcast is presented by Pacific Office Automation, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Learn more at pacificoffice.com.
Pulled in by Wilson for a touchdown. What a throw by Kyler Murray facing pressure. Connor to the five and into the end zone for the touchdown.
Welcome to Cardinals Underground, presented by Pacific Office Automation. Visit pacificoffice.com. Problem solved.
Middle of the end zone, picked off. Kaiser White with the interception.
The latest news and notes from the insiders who cover the team.
Touchdown, Kyler Murray. That defender is in multiple pieces.
Oh, that was nasty right there, right?
Slam to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
I ain't scared of nobody.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Can I just say right out of the gates, Darren, you may or may not like this, doesn't matter because I'm going right here off the top of Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation, that if you're a major content provider, and Danny, you can define that however you want.
Danny okay? was just going to point to herself.
It's good. If you scan the media landscape and you don't see a mock draft for that day, then you need to fill that void, or that's an epic fail in your strategy department. There's such an insatiable appetite for these mock drafts. I don't care what your opinion might be of the mock drafts, Darren Urban. That void needs to be filled on a daily basis between now and the draft 2024.
Daily? That's a lot. I will say Darren loves himself a mock draft because I get
doing
sent.
Not other people's mock
draft.
Yeah,
just the Cardinals. Own. Just the Cardinals.
No, but I mean like
that sounds kinda,
I do.
That sounds yes. kind of pretentious.
Well, it surely is, Paulie clickbait, but I mean, Pro
that,
Football Focus.
That blew back in my face.
The Pro Football Focus. Mock draft simulator. Yes, I've gotten a little obsessed with it. Even my son saw me on the couch the other night when we were watching the Suns, and I started doing another one. And he looked at me and he goes, "You're doing another one of those?"
Your son and I can relate, Darren.
I can't wait till I send the whole folder of all of my mock drafts to Danny right before the draft.
But wait a minute. Okay. I know the hit rate in these mock drafts typically is like 2 out of 32 picks.
Yeah.
That's usually the average, which is beyond abysmal. But do you take any substance from the fact that the return for trading away number 4 seems to be increasing? The most recent one from The Athletic, by the way, says, yes, Minnesota's going to have to give up 11 and 23 and a 2025 first-round pick.
See, for me, I don't. Nobody knows this. Nobody knows how much is going to cost to make a trade, just like nobody knows who's going to get picked where. To me, the point of substance, I mean, the way the simulator that I use, it's fun to mess around with and make all these trades that were never going to happen. But for me, the biggest actual reason that I like doing it that actually gives me something to it is because I keep doing like seven round, like I'm doing the entire draft. So like, I know a lot more names and have an idea of a lot more players than I ever would have otherwise, because you keep going through these mock drafts and you're seeing these names pop up. And now whether those players are really ones that the Cardinals might be interested or would be falling in the same place, I'm not sure. But I know of a lot more players of their existence and that kind of thing than I ever would have before because of this.
You have to take the mock drafts with a grain of salt. When you're talking about the trade scenario specifically, we can talk about what we think it might take for Minnesota to trade up from 11 to 4 with the Cardinals. How do we know that there's not going to be a bidding war? That New York at 6, I don't know, you wouldn't get as much. Denver at 8. I mean, with Sean Payton, they could be going all in.
Denver at 12. They're at 12.
12,
so
sorry.
More, yeah.
So when you're taking into account the trades and what it would take from someone like Minnesota, that's something to keep in mind. Is we can talk about what it would take, but there could be another team on the other line and they're offering more, and so okay. Or it could be a situation where we haven't talked about this a whole lot, I don't think. We could have another situation like last year where Monty Austin Fort traded down and then back up. So there could be a scenario where the Cardinals trade out of 4 and we might be thinking, what? Like, you really didn't get a lot. And the whole reason the Cardinals traded out of 4 was because they knew they were going to trade up from maybe 11 to 6. Or, well, that wouldn't make sense because New York wouldn't trade down. They need a quarterback. But you get my point.
So
when you're talking
okay.
about the trades is with a grain of salt.
So considering between the two of you, you've done some like 5 or 6 dozen of these simulators. Are you getting more in return for trading out of number 4 now than you did 2 months ago?
Not on the Pro Football Focus one, no. It's still...
And the simulator is still giving you the same return.
Yeah. Well, usually it's funny because for me... When we're doing the trades, like the way this simulator works is like when you're about to be on the clock, it gives you X number of teams want to trade with you. And then you check to see what teams want to trade with you. And oftentimes at 4, there's like, I don't know, 8 teams that want to trade. But not all of them are what you know, sometimes it's Minnesota. I usually don't trade down that far. Usually the team I've probably traded with the most in my little simulator is the Giants at 6. And because I only have to go down 2 spots, or the Tennessee Titans at 7, the couple times that's happened, which is always hilarious because a couple times I've traded down thinking, okay, they're coming up to get a quarterback. Somebody's coming up to get a quarterback so that I'll trade down and one of these top 3 receivers will still be there. And then one of the receivers goes in the number 4 spot anyways. It's kind of funny.
So am I putting you on the spot if I ask, what do you get for going from 4 to 6? Do you get a round 2 pick for that? What do you typically get?
Yeah, it was. I think a lot of times I end up getting something like you swap 4 for 6, and then you get the Giants like 2nd round pick, and then I think I've gotten something like a 4th rounder for next year or something.
Okay.
The funniest one was trading back. I think I traded back with the Titans once, so I went from 4 to 7. We went from 4 to 7, and then I got. Rounds 2, they didn't have a 3rd round pick next year because I think the Cardinals have it. No, I don't know. They don't have a 3rd round pick, but I got Tennessee's 2nd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th from going from 4 to 7. And it ended up, Marvin Harrison ended up being on the board at 7 anyway. So it was like, that's never, ever going to happen, people.
You know what? No. Marvin Harrison on the board at 7?
Yeah.
I mean, that violates the whole 95% confidence interval deal that they taught you in stats class back in college.
Yeah, nobody taught me that.
That's just not that's not feasible, plausible, absolutely no chance whatsoever. So here's the Athletic mock draft, Danny, because I know you're dying to know.
Sure am.
Cardinals trade number 4 to Minnesota. They take J.J. McCarthy. Once again, let there be... a 4th QB. Cardinals cash that in for number 11, number 23, a 2025 round 1 pick. And then at 11, they take Terrion Arnold, the corner out of Alabama. Absolutely plausible, no doubt. At 23, they take Brian Thomas Jr. Yes, they need a receiver. They take a receiver. At number 27, here's a new name, at least for me, that I haven't seen, Jerzon Newton, the D lineman out of Illinois.
Well, I think one of the reasons you haven't seen that name is because most people think he's going before 27.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. And then Edgerrin Cooper, who I'm familiar with, the A&M inside linebacker, who pound for pound might be the toughest, nastiest dude in this draft. They have him going to the Cardinals at 35.
An off-ball linebacker.
An inside linebacker.
In the 2nd round. Which?
In the 2nd round. Which, okay, so let's hit zoom out here. Because if you're Monty Osifort, you have to work a year ahead. Are you taking a running back in this draft because James Conner is in the final year of his deal?
Yes.
Are you going O-line in this draft strictly because, as Craig Grealou pointed out to me, and you can't spell Grealou without the AI, that only 3 offensive linemen are under contract beyond 2024? So do you continue to invest significant assets into your O-line?
Yes.
Because beyond this guy. And then at linebacker, guess what? Kaiser White's in the 2nd year of a 2-year deal. So... is there a future? Is that an underrated or sleeper position we're not considering?
Couldn't it be an underrated or sleeper position and you don't take it at 35? Are those my, right? Can it be a sleeper position and I don't have to take it at 35?
But
and I take an offensive lineman?
But because that position, just putting my finger to the wind, is sort of a depressed piece of real estate these days, inside linebacker. I would say that if this guy really is a baller and a game changer and a difference maker, and if you were to get him at 35.
I agree. Like again,
and considering the brand of ball that JG wants to play and he's nasty.
First of all, I want to apologize for all those who keep writing into me and telling me how Paul Calvisi is stupid for keeping bringing up all the trade downs because they hate him because he's the one bringing the truth.
Why
and it
are
could
people
happen.
So mean okay. online? You wouldn't say any of that to
well,
his face.
Well, they might, but
did you have to throw the word "all"? Like all those people? Like you know, there's
been multiple people.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, well, it's
I'm
because
not one
you're
of them,
setting.
Paul.
It's because you're setting up the trades that. Let's face it. This isn't. Implausible.
No.
Now, getting
look
back,
what Monty Asafort did last
yes,
year.
Exactly. I will say that the off-ball linebacker would be interesting, but again, I'm going to say this about all these people, and you here's a good example. If you are somebody who is saying, for instance, this team would be dumb to pass on Marvin Harrison at four because X, Y, and Z, and he's generational, blah 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 blah. You can't argue against the possibility of an off-ball linebacker at 35 if you believe you're getting this next-level player in this position that normally you wouldn't be able to get him at. So I'm not ruling anything out. And the idea that Monty Asafort should rule any of this out is goofy.
That's the give and take of every draft, not just the first-round picks. You get to a point of having to toe the line of best player available or position of need. Sometimes that position of need isn't a great need this year, but maybe in the next 1 or 2 years. And if that player is so good that when they develop, they're going to be here for a long time, that helps your case of taking an off-ball linebacker at 35.
I want to take some of the heat off Paul here.
Wow.
Briefly. All right, I'm gonna name four names, and I want you to tell me why they have relevance here.
Relevance. Okay. That's sort of a broad term, but here we go.
Spotlight's on you, Paul.
Okay. And I have something to say about the inside linebacker, okay. So don't let me forget okay. about that. Here we go.
Peter Warwick, Charles Rogers.
Oh, boy.
Justin Blackmon.
Hello.
Sammy Watkins.
Yeah. All top five bus.
All top five wide receiver bus.
Yeah. In fact, don't make me match that with my list, if I can find it here on the fly, of the last decade. Here it is. Receivers taken in the top seven picks in the last decade.
Okay.
Sammy Watkins, fourth.
Yeah.
Mike Evans, seventh.
Good.
Amari Cooper, fourth.
Pretty good.
Not fourth. No. Kevin White, seventh.
Oh, boy.
Disaster.
Former Cardinal great.
Yeah. Corey Davis, fifth.
Oh,
disaster.
I forgot about Corey Davis.
Mike Williams, talented. Always injured.
Chargers
seventh.
Mike Williams, right?
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Chargers Mike Williams. Jamar Chase, fifth. Okay,
awesome.
we'll give you Jamar Chase. Jalen Waddle, sixth.
Pretty good.
Pretty good, but sixth?
Yeah.
So when the whole trade scenario came up, and I think it was Rick Spielman, right? 33rd team, I think, was the content provider. Rick Spielman, former Vikings GM, and he went on a podcast, and he said, and this is within the week, if I'm the Arizona Cardinals and I'm trading with the Minnesota Vikings, I need more than 11 and 23. I need that round one 2025, is exactly what that athletic mock draft I just read.
Is he sticking it to the Vikings by bringing that up?
And then he threw in, if not that round one pick, if I'm the Cardinals, I ask for Justin Jefferson.
Whew.
And we hashed this out
Wouldn't
here.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
We hashed this out here in the studio. But wait a minute. You got to pay him. And you got to pay him handsomely.
Yes, you do.
We get that.
You would have a lot of money invested in your quarterback and wide receiver one. A lot.
But you know what you don't have? A bust in the top five. Receiver busts that have been chronic. Receiver in the first round has had the lowest hit rate of any position group in recent NFL history. Now, do we think the Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be a bust? No, we don't. But it does eliminate any prospect thereof, and you have a plug-and-play, arguably the best all-around receiver in the game, ready to go day one, week one. If you go for Justin Jefferson, yes, you have to pay him, but now you take those other first-round picks and you're going after corner, edge, O-line, however you deem it, and you don't have to worry about receiver.
It's funny because I remember Jerry Sullivan in his second go-around with the Cardinals was here the year Justin Jefferson got drafted, and I remember talking to him, what year was Justin Jefferson a rookie? I'm trying to remember.
It was 3 years ago because he's coming up. He's going to be eligible.
The Zaven Collins draft?
But he does not turn 25 until this summer. He's still 24 years of age.
Maybe it was the Isaiah Simmons draft. I remember talking to Jerry Sullivan saying, because of where we are at receiver, we wouldn't be taking him with our first pick. But he goes, Justin Jefferson is going to be great. Now, Jerry Sullivan, before he came to the Cardinals, was at LSU doing stuff. So, he had some personal, but he was right. Justin Jefferson, LSU churning out some good receivers. I almost said something.
By the way, he went number 22 overall in 2020.
Okay, so that was the Isaiah Simmons draft.
Yep.
But again, the Cardinals still had Fitz, they still had Christian Kirk, and they still had DeAndre Hopkins. So,
and the Isaiah Simmons takes us back to the inside linebacker conversation. I'll just say this. Did Isaiah Simmons work out at number 8? Absolutely not. Did you have a chance in that draft to take Tristan Wirfs? Yes, you did. The next year, you took Zaven Collins, who started as an inside linebacker, is now an outside linebacker. I get it. But don't minimize the impact that Fred Warner has for the 49ers. Don't minimize what Roquan Smith does for the Ravens. If you get that guy at inside linebacker, it can absolutely be the epicenter of your defense.
Well, that's why Steve Keim at the time wanted to draft Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins was exactly that.
Because Tampa just won the Super Bowl, and for everything that Tom Brady was, that defense with Lavonte David and Devin White, and it's a copycat league. So you can't tell me that Steve Keim at the time didn't look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and go, yes, please, we need one of those. And he went for middle linebacker, or at least so he thought.
I think that's fair. It's it's a good and intriguing spot to be when the Cardinals have so many needs, right? Like, it would make sense to take a wide receiver at 4 overall when we are hearing how impactful they can be and how they can transition some of these top receivers, the success they had in college, into the pros. Because the Cardinals have so many needs elsewhere, and because the draft is not as deep in other positions, it also makes sense to trade down, in my opinion, and then address those needs. And then where this draft is deep in wide receiver and offensive line, you take them a little later, or you address a linebacker, because again, while that might not be the most pressing need this year, it could be next year. And you bring up a great point, Paul, that they could a linebacker who is a ball hawk, who plays nasty, who is fierce, fits the type of player that Jonathan Gannon wants to have on this defense.
Cardinals defense wasn't nearly the same, in my opinion, after Kaiser White was injured.
Agreed.
So, but then again, you hit on Kaiser White. That was a great signing last offseason. But once again, these GMs work a year ahead of time. So with that in mind, to what degree do you guys think running back is on the draft radar?
I think it absolutely is. James Conner is going into his final year, correct?
Correct.
So
is Michael Carter.
You have the pieces. It looked like once we got near the end of the season, because Michael Carter was a late addition, so once he had a couple of weeks under his belt, you could see how it worked out nicely. He was shifty and he was fast, and to have that paired with the bulldozer that James Conner is, and then you have Amari DiMercato more as your blocker, your third down running back. James Conner, as I feel like Darren at this point, doesn't have the track record of having a fully healthy season. And do you feel comfortable with who you have in that running back's room to have somebody step in as the number one running back in the way that offensive coordinator Drew Petzing likes to run the ball? So it would not surprise me if there is a running back that maybe fits more of the style of James Conner to have in that room and to kind of work towards maybe not a true number two if you want to have the difference and have that balance of still having Conner and then Carter, but start developing a running back. I think it'll also be interesting to see when we get a chance, whenever that may be, to talk to special teams coordinator Jeff Rogers of the changes and all of these special teams plays and the kickoffs and all of that. I mean, how is that going to change roster configuration, and how is that going to change the draft? And maybe a shifty running back is a little bit more of a priority for those reasons as well. I know that they signed DJ Dallas, so maybe not so much this year in that sense, but I do think when you're looking at the running back's room, I think it would be wise if they see a running back that they see could fit similarly to what Conner does, it would make sense to draft one for the future.
I mean, for everything that Michael Carter is, you're not running him between the tackles 15 times a game. So if you're without James Conner, okay, DJ Dallas, I just looked it up, 5'10", 214, a little more equipped. But all right, I think you are in the market. You know, maybe there's a free agent running back right before camp that, you know, a veteran with some size.
That's what makes me hesitate on this in terms of the draft. I'm not saying they wouldn't take somebody, but you've got so many holes, so many places that could I see a situation where they take a running back? Absolutely. Could I see a situation where they get on the draft's last day and they decide to take, I don't know, an extra cornerback or an extra tackle or an extra guard or whatever and not burn a pick on a running back because you not only feel like you can find those guys wherever, but also it's going to be easier. The idea of having one now makes sense to me. I don't know if that's a position as opposed to like when you brought up the inside linebacker or an offensive lineman or whatever, a tackle. I don't know if that's a position where you're like, well, you know, if we need one next year, you can draft one next year. You'll find one next year. You'll be able to get one. I think that's a little bit easier to say. That doesn't mean they wouldn't, but that's kind of how I'm seeing it.
Well, and if you're looking at, okay, you wait this till next off season, guess what? Running back has a history of being able to plug and play right out of the draft.
Exactly.
If there's one position group. Yeah, you can take a
rookie. And you never know who's going to be on the free agent market either.
Yeah. No, you're right. So
yeah, we saw the running backs carousel this free agency.
By the way, you're talking about, you know, dialing some stuff up, you know, with the offense there, Danny. What if you had a 4-2-1 guy as your slot receiver in the whole Tyreek Hill role? Because Xavier Worthy reportedly has a top 30 visit to the Cardinals this week. And if you tally up all the reported top 30 visits, nearly 1/4 of the top 30, 7 so far, have been receivers.
Well, I think when you look at their room, it's pretty obvious they got to go in that direction. I do want to clarify one thing, and this is nothing to do with you, Paul.
For once.
So he goes from complimenting Paul
but
to now
really,
to throw him under the
bus. It's not really
Let's
a top 30 visit. It's just a 30 visit because the top 30 implies some kind of like hierarchy, and it's just they get 30 visits.
That's true. You're right. You're right. It's 30 visits. It's not like top 30 and then you get the next 30.
Yeah, and it's
you're right.
It's
by saying
kind of
top
like,
30, it's 30.
It's like
anyways,
he's in their top 30 guys, okay. And I think that misleads some people.
Okay, so a 30 visit. And some of the other names that have come through recently, if you take a look at it, include like Leatu Latu, the edge guy, Dallas Turner. So there have been those guys. There have been defensive tackles that have come through. By the way, hard not to notice that the guy drafted just ahead of Isaiah Simmons in that draft, Derek Brown, just got paid El Grande by Carolina. In fact, that has been a trend this offseason, has it not? Edge guys and defensive linemen getting big, big contracts. So once again, for all you haters out there, I'm just saying that there's a lot of receivers in this draft. You can wait and take receiver end of round one, top of round two. Can you wait on an edge or a defensive lineman? Hence, if you are going to trade down from 4, because I do not believe that there's an edge or D lineman worthy of number 4.
I would agree with that.
If you trade down from 4, I think you almost have to, first and foremost, consider defensive front at 11, 12, or 13. Let's just say that's where you end up. And then wait for receiver later. Because supply exists with the receivers, and it does not exist with those defensive linemen and edge guys.
I would agree with that.
So it's almost reverse engineering it.
And I do... And again, this is going to irritate greatly a vast majority of listeners here, but I do think that if you choose not to go after, especially one of those top three receivers, I think there's going to be almost all of them there whether you're picking at 23 or 27, because I think you're going to end up, you're going to have a run on defensive players, I think, and then I think you're going to have a run on tackles, which... Cardinals might want to get in on that too, but like I think that's going to fill up the middle part of the round, first round, in my opinion.
Here's the other thing. I mean, some of these names I'm going to rattle off in other years, more pedestrian years for receiver, these guys would be first round picks. Like A.D. Mitchell, 6'2", 205, 4'3", 440. We talk about Brian Thomas. He's been wide receiver rising, the 4'3", 340, 6'3", nearly. You got guys like Keon Coleman, Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina, who's a Deebo Samuel, DJ Moore type. I mean, there's a lot of really talented dudes, the Ladd McConkeys and Ricky Pearsalls and even Troy Franklin, the number one receiver out of Oregon, who's nearly 6'3", and he was Bo Nix's guy. there's a lot of talent at that position. And once again, Justin Jefferson, the latest example, at number 22 and might be the best receiver in the game.
The most important thing is that you draft a wide receiver that can come and be a starter. That to me is, regardless of where you're taking them, it can't be a situation where, okay, like, you know, they might need a little bit of time, or they could be like a 1B or 2 receiver. It's very clear that this team is missing a true number one receiver. That's what you have to hit on. And even if that happens a little later, the 23-27 range, we haven't really talked about the pros of trading up one of those, you know, the second pick, or if they trade down or anything like that. I do think that you can still get a very impactful starting wide receiver when you draft a little bit lower. That's just the key to me, is I don't know that this is a position that you can really wait past maybe 35, that top pick in the second round.
I do think the Cardinals need a starter. I don't think there's any question about that, a starting receiver. I think with the Trey McBride thing and the way this offense kind of unfolded, I don't know if you have to have the number one target on your passing offense be this guy. And that makes it a little bit, I think it gives Monty Osenford a little bit more of a flexibility, let's say. Because not everybody, even if they're going to be good, is necessarily going to drop in and be unbelievable. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald's rookie year was solid, but it wasn't, no one was writing, oh, this guy's going to the Hall of Fame.
That's a good word for it, solid.
And so what kind of patience does the team have for that in this situation with a receiver? What kind of patience, not that it matters in the long run, what kind of patience does the fan base have with that? If you get a guy at 23 or 27 or 35 or whatever it might be, and he's solid this year, and you play better football, and then he ends up trending up, is everybody going to be pulling their hair out if Marvin Harrison's out there getting 1,300 yards?
I mean, the Houston Texans traded a second-round pick to Buffalo for Stephon Diggs. Why?
For 1 year of Stephon Diggs.
Yeah. Why? It's a loaded wide receiver draft. Well, may I surmise? Because he's plug and play. He's proven. You know what you have. Day one, he goes in there. He has the experience. He has the production. And you don't have to wait on his development, to your point, for a receiver to go through that learning curve. Now, Tank Dell was ahead of the curve for the Houston Texans. He was really impressive in that game Cardinals played in Houston. But if you're Houston and you're thinking, all right, we just won a playoff game and we have a chance to compete, I don't want to wait for a rookie receiver. So they go after Stephon Diggs. To me, that would be a positive with Justin Jefferson. Don't have to worry about whether he might be a bust, whether there might be a two-year learning curve. He is just automatic, boom, he's going to get double coverage week one. And so that's what's appealing to me on that front. By the way,
why I'm curious, why would the Vikings trade Justin Jefferson?
They're quarterback desperate.
So what would that,
that's
in your mind,
answer.
Would that be an even swap? Cardinals move from 4 to 11 and get Justin Jefferson and that's it? Or you get
11
picks?
And 23. Plus Justin Jefferson, because it's
If I'm the Vikings, I'm trading. I'd rather trade next year's first round pick of a player that you don't know is going to be any good than I'm trading the best receiver in the game.
Well, and that's great. Monty says, okay, well, you hang on line four because I've got Denver and I got Vegas and I have the Giants in lines one, two, and three.
Again, I was talking to somebody this morning in the office about this. Somebody on the sales side, and they were talking about potential trades, and I'm like, people need, and I know we've talked about this a million times, nothing is going to happen until we get to draft night. It makes no sense for the Cardinals, and it makes no sense to whoever would trade into number four. No sense at all. Because the people that want to trade up, all those early picks are going to be quarterbacks, and it makes no sense to make that trade if you don't know who's going to be on the board. It's malfeasance, I will argue, to trade up without knowing who's on the board.
But what if, all right, you like to push back over here, so we're going to push back the other way, Danny. What if Monty Osenford gets his Trey Lance deal? What if he gets three, count them, three first-round picks? Because that Trey Lance deal was executed a good month out before the draft, where the Niners moved up with Miami.
Right.
And Miami pulled the trigger because we got three first-round picks. Before they get buyer's remorse, we'll take that. And they traded out of that spot a month before they were on the clock.
Well, again, I'm right now, I'm not necessarily saying Monty doesn't make the move, but like, why would anybody trade 2-4 a month out? In that particular case, San Francisco knew, and I don't know if they liked Mac Jones and then went to Trey Lance late or if they always liked Trey Lance. They pretty much always knew one of those two guys were going to be there. And I'm telling you right now, you don't know who's going to be there at 4 because the top three teams all want quarterbacks.
Could I say, if you're Denver...
Say whatever you want, Paul. If your podcast.
If you're Denver and you're really thinking about starting this season with Jared Stidham, you will not get a primetime game. And I'm guessing...
Yeah, I'm sure Sean Payton is sitting in his office going, man, if we don't get a primetime game...
That's my way of saying that you're not a factor this coming season. If you're starting the season with Jared Stidham, how do you get that fan base reinvigorated, reinvested in Denver? I mean, are you really coming out of the gates with Jared Stidham? I guess what I'm saying is Denver, there's some serious urgency there to get a quarterback.
What is Denver giving you? I don't think Denver can give you a package that's worth
it. What do they have left? You're right.
They don't.
You're right. And they,
I think they're a non-factor.
And they probably won't part with Patrick Surtain, although that would be my first ask. It would.
It'll be interesting, too. Are we sure the Chargers are staying at 5?
Good point. They might be the one team more in need of wide receiver one than the Arizona Cardinals.
I think the Chargers...
But if one of these teams in the 11 to 13 range is trying to get ahead of New York at 6, I mean, I
think the Chargers situation is going to be dependent on the Cardinals. If the Cardinals and pick and take a non-quarterback, then I think the Chargers are absolutely open for business.
Here's the other thing that we tend to forget about Jim Harbaugh. He has run first, second, and third based on his tenure with the 49ers. And we got a dose of it twice a year for how many years when he was the head coach of the 49ers. Here comes Frank Gore 30 times a game between the tackles. And he's already building that team with that in mind. So for all the smoke and mirrors, the Chargers are going to go with a receiver at 5. What if they go Joe Alt? What if they go O-line? The same question I throw out there, and it's a genuine question. I don't have the answer when I say, how much does Monty Osifor and Jonathan Gannon even value the receiver position? Do they even attach number 4 overall to receiver? I think the same could be said for Jim Harbaugh. Everything coming out of the Chargers camp, and by the way, they're already practicing because it's a new head coach. They're doing the offseason, whatever the terminology is this time of year. There's a bunch of Chargers players in the media talking about how Harbaugh has gone heavy-handed with all the physicality that he's going to institute with the Chargers. It's going to be a completely different brand of ball with the LA Chargers, who, by the way, are on the Cardinals schedule this year, coming to State Farm Stadium. So I guess I throw out there that we think we know, to your point last week about Will Levis, right? This time a year ago, I was like, oh, Will Levis, top 5. Then he goes round 2. Do we really know what Jim Harbaugh is going to do? All we know about Jim Harbaugh is based on that. Can you name who his number 1 and number 2 receivers were from those 49er teams that went to the NFC Championship game 3 years in a row? The Jim Harbaugh era?
What years were
for the 49ers?
49ers, when Harbaugh was head coach of the Niners, who were his top receivers? I can't even remember.
Brandon somebody maybe? I don't know. I will say this. It was funny. Somebody brought up the draft party being announced and the idea that trading 4 wouldn't go over very well. Let's put it that way. And I'm thinking to myself, if you end up with a trade where you get out of 4, but you get 2 first-round picks this year, plus the third one, which you already have, the 27, and in a first-round next year, I'm like, is that, are the fans really going to be that upset about it, 3 first-round picks? It's going to be really, really damn busy around here on Friday. But.
Well, look, as someone who's hosted the draft party for many years and as Keister's been blowing in the wind the last couple of years with trades, was there some of that reaction when the Cardinals traded out of number 3 last year? Sure. But then 45 minutes later, oh, wait a minute. Cardinals are moving up to number 6, and they got the best tackle in the draft and the best tackle to come out of Ohio State since Orlando Pace, the first ballot Hall of Famer, and all of a sudden the excitement redlined. So, yes, there's sort of the up and the down. You know, fans are wondering, but that's what makes it intriguing. It's in real time. It's reality TV that is, it is truly happening before your eyes. So that's why people show up.
Well, don't leave the fans hanging, Paul. Why don't you share the draft party info while we're on it? You're the one who's going to be there. It's all about you.
No. The doors open at 4. Draft starts at 5, as we know. They put massive jumbotron screens on either side of the stage, which is out on the Great Lawn. So you're following along the draft. And by the way, did you realize the draft is televised by 4 entities this year? It's on ABC, ESPN, NFL Network, and ESPN Deportes.
Oh, so, I thought I was on True TV.
We'll get to the whole NCAA
March
Madness.
That's what you're watching in the media workroom, Darren. Yeah.
So, boom, come on out. It's free. You have to sign up ahead of time. Go to azcardinals.com. You have to sign up, and you're allowed 4 passes, I think, per what it explains it all right there. azcardinals.com/draft party. So you have Cardinals players out there, cheerleaders, Big Red, tons of food and beverage, all for purchase. There's going to be fireworks at the conclusion of the event. It's a good time. Really well done.
You're the host.
Well, we get the ball to the playmakers, all right? We bring on the coaches, the players, the interview. Usually, knock on wood, the first interview with a first-round pick happens at the draft party via uplink.
Which first-round pick, Paul?
See, now, Darren, you're not the only one who's going to be busy.
Don't stress him out.
Not going to be the only one who's going to be busy, okay? Once again, the words that Josh Rosen uttered, there were 9 mistakes made ahead of me, were first said at the Cardinals draft party 2018.
So head on out there.
Oh, there you go. By the way, speaking of the NCAA and State Farm Stadium, there was a headline. Where was it? It was somebody tweeted it out, and it was Purdue's Final Four win the loudest State Farm Stadium has ever been? And thank you, because I laughed as well.
Come on. Man.
That's a definitive no.
We were down there in the field when they won the NFC Championship, Paul.
Exactly. It doesn't get any louder than the NFC Championship. So I don't know who was responsible for
that headline.
It's funny
that it gets brought up because all I keep hearing was that it was kind of muted the whole Final Four weekend.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Just in general.
Okay. So I don't know.
I mean, it certainly wasn't the women's final.
That was exciting to watch. Isn't the women's coming here in the next couple of years?
I think you're right on that.
Right,
yes. Yeah, that
sounds... Maybe 2026-ish?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds about right.
By the way, the UConn students who last year took down a light pole and used it as a battering ram to bash through the student union after winning this year...
In Connecticut.
Not the UConn, here. Yeah. This year, I guess they took down street signs. They're like, stop signs, other street signs, and used that as a battering ram around town. So... Yeah, so, okay.
Good times.
I'd like to be a parent. You get a call from your kid and you just got expelled. There were a half dozen students I saw who were expelled last year, 3 of whom were about a month out from graduation.
Oof. Ooh.
Yeah, that'll hurt. That'll leave a mark. There's no doubt about that. Darren, if it's not the mock drafts, what gets my ire these days is when you see these stories. Here's one. 9 teams that most need to ace their picks. Is NFL.com.
All the other teams don't have
to.
Yeah.
Their picks.
Doesn't really matter.
The Chiefs.
So here it is. Here's their power poll of teams most in need to nail their picks in this draft. Number 1, Denver. Number 2, Chicago, because they pick 1 and 9. 3, Minnesota. They have 11 and 23. 4, Washington. 5, Arizona. And then you go 6, 7, 8, 9. New England, Buffalo, the Giants, the Chargers.
So really most of the teams at the beginning of the draft because they're the worst teams.
Yes.
So
with the exception of Denver, which goes from picking 12 to number 1 in their power poll, is most needing to ace their picks. A, because they don't have many left.
Yeah.
After trading them away in the Russell Wilson fiasco. And number 2, they don't have a quarterback, so they need to figure that out as well.
I'm just to touch on that real briefly. I believe in what you're saying when you say Denver desperately needs a quarterback. I also believe in my heart of hearts that if there is a coach who is going to say, F you, I can win with Jarrett Stidham, it's Sean Payton.
It could be. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's no doubt about that one. Look, here's the other thing about when you look at this draft. I mean, for example, I think Seattle's a sleeper for a quarterback, but is Michael Penix going to make it all the way to 16? Could Bo Nix end up? If you're working a year ahead, what is John Schneider doing at quarterback behind Geno Smith long term? And don't give me Sam Howell in Seattle right now. So I think there is a lot still to be determined on that one.
But if you're Seattle, Are you? I don't know. I mean, I guess if you believe in them, you believe in them. I mean, we're right now we're talking about what you're just talking about. You're talking about not only six quarterbacks going in the first round, which is a lot, but you're talking about if he's there at 16, you're talking about six quarterbacks potentially going in the top 15. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we talk about that every year, how it's going to happen, and then it doesn't happen.
Okay. By the way, I did look up, we had this discussion last week about free agent cornerbacks that could be available. Let's say the Cardinals take Marvin Harrison Jr. at number four. Okay, I pause as the Red Sea celebrates. And then they end up going, you know, with another position at 27. No trades, they end up with their two picks. Okay, guess what? They're without cornerback one when this draft ends. Guess what? Stephon Gilmore is still out there. Yes, he's age 33, but he started 17 of 17 games last year for Dallas. Steven Nelson is out there, starter for Houston a year ago, started 16 of 17 games, had four picks, 12 passes defensed. He's age 31. He'll get a one-year deal. Adoree Jackson, 28-year-old, last year with the Giants, was their number one corner.
Was he not in Tennessee with Monty at one point?
I think you could be right on that. Okay. So keep him on the radar. And then the Rams' best corner last year is now is still a free agent, Akella Witherspoon. He was pretty decent last year in those two games Cardinals played against Witherspoon. He's hard to miss. He's 6'2". You stand on the field, you're like, that's a big dude playing corner. 6'2", 195, started all 17 games. So every one of these free agents has a track record of durability, reliability, which has been a staple in Monty free agent signings. Those guys are out there, and I'm guessing they will be out there until after the draft, and then somebody might pounce. So I wouldn't be shocked if that's on his radar.
There will be like a second round of free agency. And for some of those veterans, it might take a lot longer. I was reading a great story about Jadeveon Clowney, and I forgot that he had basically blown up his knee his first game in the NFL. And so has always been kind of recovering. And we always kind of joke about Jadeveon Clowney because it seems like he's a free agent every offseason. But he's done a nice job of maximizing his money. And what I didn't even realize is I think he's only been to like two or three training camps his whole career because he usually doesn't sign until he gets to skip training camp. I'm like, that's just smart living.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, you know, and he looked good in the playoffs too. Jadeveon Clowney, I thought he played some pretty good ball in the postseason. By the way, here was the stinking quote I was looking for from Jim Harbaugh and that physical team thing, which reminded me of Jonathan Gannon, what he's instituting, right? The tight end Hayden Hurst, who played for John Harbaugh, was talking about how Jim Harbaugh got up and told everyone, we want to out-physical teams. We want teams to fear us. We want teams to end up giving in the fourth quarter. Harbaugh's answer to the media when asked about that is, my first goal is to make you as a player harder to break. So he's been instituting certain things as head coach. I'm like, that sounds a lot like the style of ball that Jonathan Gannon.
Has there ever been a coach that has come in and said, yeah, you know what? If you want to be physical, that's cool. But
if not, no worries.
If we're not that physical, it's not that big of a deal.
Okay, let's keep it real. Wasn't Cliff Kingsbury accused of being that guy? Wasn't all that concerned with physicality?
Good rebuttal, Paul.
Yeah, that's good rebuttal.
I'm just throwing that out there. So, look, I just think that's all part of the equation. We had Derek LeBlanc sitting right there, Cardinals D-line coach.
He's pointing at me.
For the Big Red Rage. And you might have seen some of the video clips are out there. He's sitting right there and just talking about, you know what? Sure, these defensive linemen need to have the measurables. So, but first and foremost, in my opinion, they need to be willing to stick their face mask in there. They need that element of toughness. And I asked Kyle VandenBosch on the Red Sea Report, if I give you film of college players, of free agent NFL defensive linemen, could you tell? Could you ascertain whether they were, quote, a tough guy or tough enough to be part? He said, absolutely. Just watch their effort level when the game's already decided. Watch their effort level when the ball's not going to their side of the field.
See,
watch the tenacity with which they go after offensive linemen. So, interesting. You know, the value system, perhaps, that they're going to put in place. Like a Bilal Nichols and Justin Jones? I never would have forecasted they signed with the Cardinals, but I'm guessing those two guys check those two boxes.
What always troubles me with this subject is I would agree with you. If you're an expert in the game, like KVB was saying, like you should be able to see that, right? So why would you ever sign somebody who's not that? I don't. And I've covered this team for, what, 25 years, whatever stupid amount it's been. Like, there have been plenty of players where, like, they've walked in. I'm like, yeah, I can kind of, like, I can just see from your personality you're not going to stick your face in the fan. Like, I don't understand why teams would do that or draft them.
Yeah. Well, but players like that end up on teams.
You're right.
So the players good enough to help you in games or good enough when you're in close games, you just know that.
Yeah.
Maybe when the game is lost, I mean, Cardinals.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't want to get in trouble.
Don't get in trouble. We don't want to get you in trouble.
Thanks.
Well, I mean, look at a Chase Young, right?
I knew that was coming out of your mouth, Paul.
Okay, but he was a former number two pick overall.
Yep, you're talking about Super Bowl game.
Because
that clip of him.
Yes. So I mean, he got
not finishing.
He
the
got
play.
He get. I mean, he checked every other box. He was the number two pick overall.
Mm-hmm.
But
now I do think part of it has to do with the fact that, just like anything else, coaches think if I get him.
If you're good enough when you're good, when you're close, or when you're winning.
I can get them to that level.
Sure. Well, the other point, I should be fair, KBB said, you know, I'm not necessarily looking at the ceiling as much as I'm looking at the floor in their career. So I'll throw out, we're in the trust tree. Here we go. Jordan Phillips.
Yeah, that's obviously one we think about.
Free agent year with Buffalo. Had a great free agent year. But if you look at the first 3 years, didn't nearly match the production he had in his free agent year. And then he cashed that in. 2-year big money deal with the Cardinals, and he reverted right back to his first couple of years in the league. So there's that aspect of it. So I just, you know, once again, I just throwing that out there for consideration as you try and forecast what exactly is going to happen. Now, speaking of some of these free agents and so forth, Darren, what's happening on Monday with certain the veterans?
Well, it's anybody on Monday. So we record this on Tuesday. So before we record again, on the 15th, the Cardinals are going to start their off-season program, which starts with the Phase 1 strength and conditioning, which basically just means they can come in and work with the strength and conditioning coaches only, not allowed to do stuff with the other coaches yet, can't get a playbook, can't do any of that stuff. And then they're weightlifting and they're conditioning out on the field and getting started, and there's a couple weeks of that. And then there'll be a couple weeks of the Phase 2 stuff, and then we get to OTAs, and we're going to be well into the off-season work. But players are back in the building. Again, voluntary.
Okay.
And so you don't have to be here. Nothing for veterans, there's nothing mandatory except for the mini camp at the very end of OTAs, which is in mid-June. Everything else is voluntary. Now, a number of these players, and a lot of teams do this is now, and for instance, Buda Baker, when Buda Baker didn't show up for voluntary stuff last year, obviously was looking to fix his contract. They changed up his contract a little bit, and I noticed there's quite a large amount of money tied to showing up to the offseason work now. Now, he doesn't have to collect that if he doesn't want it, but it's easy money if he does. And that's what a lot of teams are doing with players, especially the high-end players, is they're putting in their contracts workout bonuses. Now, I've read a story, and I didn't get it. It wasn't a name. Ross Tucker, the former offensive lineman who now does stuff out there, he wrote this really interesting story that I thought, and I've always agreed with it, but this is the kind of person I would. And he was like, I never understood any players that didn't come to the voluntary stuff. It's easy money. He's like not even talking about the workout bonuses. You get paid whatever it is, $500 a week, free meals, and you're going to be doing stuff you are going to be doing anyways. And oftentimes, you are going to be paying people to do it with, and instead, they're going to pay you as little as it might be. So he was always like, I don't understand why you wouldn't just go. Obviously, coaches want to see it, but it's a big deal for the Players Association to have everybody understand it is voluntary, and if they don't come, they don't come.
Are they going to be wearing T-shirts with their number? And if we're looking for number 4 and Greg Dortch, if he's there, that's my segue to Greg Dortch.
That was really clever.
We'll see. From all indications, right, Danny, he's changed his number.
To number 4. Mm-hmm. I saw a pretty cruel comment when he posted that on his Instagram of took the job and then took the number. Thought that was
not from Dortch, but from a on the message underneath. Okay, from a fan. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, what do you think his role is going to be, and will anyone's role be as impacted by the results in the draft as Greg Dortch.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's pretty fair to say that we are expecting the Cardinals to draft a wide receiver with one of their top picks. Maybe not four. Again, maybe not even till 35 in round two.
Oh, my God. All the fans just got apoplectic. Sorry. Yeah.
They got what?
Never mind.
Bunged up.
Okay. So the Cardinals are going to need a true number one receiver, which is what the intention was when you had with Hollywood Brown. So to me, Greg Dortch's role is not going to be drastically different. Maybe in the sense of having more of what Rondale Moore was doing here, a little more active in the offensive playbook instead of just sporadically or more on special teams. I'm not expecting to see a huge jump in the way that we see Michael Wilson of we'll see Greg Dortch by any means. I think it'll just be more of a step up into what Rondale Moore was doing or what they were wanting out of him and getting that from Greg Dortch.
And I am a believer that the whole DJ Dallas means that Greg Dortch is a full-time receiver and DJ Dallas will be the return man. And it's going to benefit Greg Dortch whether he wants to admit it or not. I mean, he took a beating on a lot of those return teams. He's all of a $175. And there were times where when he got hit, he got launched into the air and he'd come to the sideline and, he'd have to shake it off. So
see, that's one of the reasons for whatever Rondale was doing, I don't see Dortch doing a lot of he won't do the running back stuff. He's not big enough.
Not
for
out of the backfield, no.
No. That'll be handled by Xavier Worthy after he's drafted number 35 overall and he brings the 4-2-1.
Xavier Worthy will be picked before 35.
And somehow,
are you already ready to name him as your pet cat for training camp?
No, somehow I get my redemption for
pet
Andy.
Pet cat?
For
Is
Andy.
That what you said?
Yeah.
Andy.
I get redemption for that as Xavier Worthy's running the jet sweep and everyone's screaming, 4-2-1, here he comes. And then the whole defense gets, distracted, gets apoplectic, the whole defense when, Xavier Worthy is.
Every week, Danny learns a little something new.
See, I don't need one of those calendars that has the dictionary, the word of the day, word of the week. I've got you, Darren.
I'm a wordsmith, Danny.
By the way, let's just say the Cardinals don't go receiver with their initial first-round pick, but they still have number 27 overall.
Yeah.
And they still need receiver. Do they trade up from 27 to go after someone earlier in the first round, whether it's a Brian Thomas Jr. or someone of that ilk?
I think that is plausible regardless of position. I think if you feel that strongly about a wide receiver, yes, I'm in favor of it. If we're talking another position, a tackle, or you're looking on defense where, again, these positions are not super deep, a cornerback, a defensive lineman, I do think that it would make sense to trade up from 27, 100%. Yeah. Get the player that you want. Yeah.
If Jared Burse is there, you want that edge. If you have a high opinion of Chop Robinson, reportedly took a 30 visit, right? So, boom, all of there. Why wait? Why take the chance? Someone jumps in front of us.
Agreed.
We're going to go get that edge guy because where else are you getting the edge player these days?
I think that's fair. I'll be curious to know, the edge class in particular is very odd this year, and you kind of touched on it earlier in terms of there's not Will Anderson.
No.
We've talked about that before.
Again, if there was someone worthy of four, the Cardinals would go that direction.
Right. I mean, I saw somebody, I think it was the 33rd team, put out a list of seven boomer bust first round picks. And there were two edge guys on it. Dallas Turner and Chop Robinson were on there as guys that could be really good or they could be not good at all.
Leiatu Latu was visiting this week.
He was on there too. So there was only eight guys and three of them are edge rushers.
I mean, Dave Pasch is telling me Latu's a dude and I'm watching some of the last couple of UCLA games. I don't know why. I can't stand UCLA. And he was a non-factor to me, but there were other games where he blowed up everything. So, yeah, I could see the boomer bust label being put on a few of these guys. Now, Dallas Turner's interesting as well because he played with Will Anderson the year before, but most don't consider him in the same class as Will Anderson.
Do you guys, if they stay at four, regardless of who they pick, do you think there's a chance they trade up from 27 still?
Yes.
You have 11 picks. You have 11 picks in this draft more than any other team, yes.
Again, even if you stay at four and you pick a wide receiver, if you feel very strongly and very set on one of the few projected first-round edge rushers and you want to get the player you want, even if there's a chance you know, that you could get one of three. But if you're set on one of them, absolutely. I think even if you take wide receiver at four, the Cardinals could still trade up from 27.
And look, there are other teams, you know, that sit in the top, the end of the top 10, in the middle, that you could trade up with. Let's say the Cardinals take Marvin Harrison Jr. once again. Pause for reaction. At number four. And then all of a sudden, you want to come up and trade with Minnesota or Denver or Vegas or one of those teams in the middle of the first round. You've had so many conversations if you're Monty Osiford, I presume, with those teams already. And if for some reason all those quarterbacks are gone and they have to face reality, then maybe they want to just vacate that spot.
It was funny. Bill Barnwell did a story on ESPN talking about what teams should do in terms of not who they should pick necessarily, but whether they should stick and pick or trade. And it is remarkable how many teams he had saying, yeah, trade down. They should trade down. They should trade down. Because, I mean, I do think there's a, and this happens every year, I do think there's a certain cliff that you hit around 10, somewhere in that area, where there's a drop off in talent, and who you're picking at 11 isn't that much different than who you'd pick at 22. And so, you know, can you trade down and get more stuff? I mean, it's a fascinating thing. And I do think the Cardinals will have opportunity to trade up from 27 if that would be something that they wanted to do.
So what was this thing with John Rahm forks up and the whole Masters dinner?
It's Masters week.
Yes.
He gets to choose the menu.
Okay. All right. And
you're
so
a big golf guy, Paul.
Trying to call
I saw
it up
you.
Right here.
I saw you hosting the recap of the Charities of Golf tournament.
Yes. Yes. And Zayvon Collins was doing his best John Rahm over there. I mean, it was pretty impressive for
Zayvon
Collins.
Actually, if you think about it, Zayvon Collins looks a little bit like
John Rahm. Little bit.
The beard. And
Rahm's a big dude, by the way.
Yeah, he is. Okay, he's not as big. I went to talk to Zayvon the other day, and I'm like, did you get bigger? And he goes, well.
Did you hit a growth spurt?
He's like, and it was more thick. And he's like, well, I lost a little bit of weight, and so I'm probably a little bit more, I have a little bit more muscle. But I'm like, he looks like a monster.
Oh, well, wait a minute. Didn't John Rahm play with J.J. Watt and Zayvon Collins? Wasn't that a thing a couple years ago?
I think he might have. He definitely played with J.J. Watt. I'm assuming Zayvon was there, since Zayvon did everything with J.J. at the time.
So anyway, I can't get this to open up, but if you have the menu in front of you, on the whole John Rahm thing.
Who won the Masters last year, so he gets to pick what they're eating.
Yep, and the ASU alum. I mean,
right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Spanish menu, which I guess makes sense. So I'm not going to even try. I guess you tried to name your dog Pico, so maybe you could give the menu a try, Paul.
Yeah.
It's pretty much, I will say, so no Cheetos. The appetizer is a crab salad and potatoes.
I'll eat that.
Then you can have a ribeye. You can have, then they have, was this a fish maybe?
What's that?
I don't know how to,
Turbo? Isn't that a snail turbo? From some Pixar movie? I don't know.
Okay. Well, that says white asparagus, but that just sounds like a side. So.
Okay.
And then the dessert is a puff pastry cake.
Okay. Well, look, in honor of John Rahm and the annual Masters dinner, you know, if indeed you were to serve said dinner, Darren, where what direction would you go? Well, what would be on your menu?
That's a fantastic question, Paul.
Let it rip. Come on.
I have mine because I was thinking about this.
Okay, go ahead, Danny.
I think I would do like a Caesar salad to start. I think I would do a ribeye with asparagus, mashed potatoes, and mac and cheese. And for a dessert, sometimes, you know, they can say like grandma's cookies. It'd have to be my younger sister's recipe for her apple crisp with
good
vanilla ice cream on top.
How come you haven't made that for us yet, Danny? Yeah, that's what I thought. I think I would go with, I will open with some tomato bisque.
Wow. Mm.
That sounds really good to me. Especially right now as we're sitting here.
Because it hasn't hit 120 yet.
That's right. Because soup is only good when it's not the summer in Arizona. A nice filet mignon might be good.
Sure. It's your menu.
What size?
I'm pretty wide.
Come on.
I'm pretty
state
pretty
it with confidence.
There was a certain restaurant I went to the other day. It was more of a main dish, but it had It was green chili pork on a mac and cheese. I know that's not a side, but we can make it a side.
It's your menu.
I'm ordering whatever I want. That sounds really good to me. And then probably some vegetable. Asparagus sounds good.
What's your dessert?
I would probably go with like either a cheesecake or like I'm going to cheese out and do like a peanut butter pie. That sounds good.
Okay. I need to clarify. My mashed potatoes would not have the skin in them because I don't like this.
I love the fact that it was important enough that you get that out there to the world.
Yes. Paul, what's on your menu?
Would it be a cheap joke if I wondered about the green bean casserole wasn't part of your...
That would be cruel to put it on my menu and make everyone else eat that.
I hate to say it. I hate to be morose here. But like when I see this master's dinner, I think of like a last meal, like someone facing the chair. And you know, it kind of reminds me of that a little bit.
So if you were about to be killed, what would be your last meal? Paul?
The main component would be eggplant parmesan. That would be the main component. I would go with that. Maybe even from Little Italy in New York, which was the best I've ever had.
Wow. So you're like...
Or North Beach in San Francisco. Those would be the two atop the power pole that I've ever had. Never been to Italy. I know it's criminal, but I would go with eggplant parm and you can fill in the rest. That's fine.
Have you been to Europe at all?
No. Well, other than the Cardinals London trip.
I was going to say, you went to London.
Biggest mistake I made, keep working right out of college and never stop. Big mistake. Should have taken time.
Before we end, I owe you an apology, Paul.
Oh boy, here we go.
Because
are we recording? I'd like several audio copies.
Yeah, first
of this.
Darren, now myself.
Yeah, here we go.
So last week you were talking about the solar eclipse and the path of totality, and I hadn't really been paying attention. And
while he was talking, you just ignored him.
Yeah, that too.
Okay,
but
you know what's really remiss about that is I jump in. I really shouldn't interrupt your apology towards me, but I will because. The last time the city of Dallas, your hometown, actually saw a total solar eclipse was like 1878. And the next time they'll see it is 2345. So just the magnitude of the moment, Danny, just for the Dallas metro area.
And I did not fully understand that. I ended up going home to Dallas this past weekend, and it was everywhere. The electric billboards, the signs in the grocery stores. I went to a bakery, and they had pastries that had the sun on them with sunglasses. It was everywhere. And we had a little bit of it here in Arizona. And it was really cool to see. But
I was in a meeting.
That's a shame for you. Seeing what, like, photos and videos from my family, my friends, and then everything online was so cool. And I don't think I really understood it. And so I think I kind of pushed it to the side when you talked about it. And honestly, like, in hindsight, I should have just extended my trip home because I came back on Sunday. Yeah. I should have just stayed through Monday.
That's a long way to say I'm sorry, Paul.
I didn't actually hear those words exactly.
You just heard them from Darren. That's close enough.
I heard a personal postcard from Dallas.
If I say those words consecutively without you guys talking in the background, it's going to be clipped for future use. So I'm not going to do that to myself. So I'll tell you off air.
I'm going to live vicariously through your family. Did they walk out and actually experience total darkness in the middle of the day? They did.
Yes, with the glasses
and
everything.
I'm so jealous. Yeah. I should have just called in sick and, you know, called your
dad. Drove to Dallas?
Yeah, just call Danny's dad and just drive to Dallas,
Brian?
And just experience it. That's what I should have done.
I told
Brian.
He would have opened up
in
his
hindsight.
House. I know. I should have just stayed home an extra day. Yep. So I apologize. Yep. It was really cool.
I can't get enough of the mock drafts, and I can't get enough of any of like these cosmos phenomenons, you know, whether it's the Phoenix Lights, the UFOs, the aliens, you know, total solar eclipse. It's all the same thing.
Well, they already have the path for, 2044, right?
How totality is that total?
And now it's going the other way, so maybe we should all book a trip, business trip.
Okay.
I think a lot of Florida.
2045? Am I still working at that point? Paul's
I'm
definitely
pretty sure
not
Orlando. Wow. Orlando is covered, so we could all go to Disney World and ride a roller coaster at the time, and then look up.
Okay. Well, in conclusion, I'm going to replay that last comment from Darren, and he's going to owe me an apology next week on Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation.